Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Okay, let's see. Any idea which Rolling Stones album was the first to reach number one on the charts on both sides of the Atlantic? Sticky Fingers is the answer. The album that gave us tracks like Wild Horses, Dead Flowers, Bitch, Sway, etc. It's over 50 years old this week. First released on the 23rd of April in 1971. So I'm going to talk to Sir Pat Carty from Hot Press about the album right now. But just before I do, I've got to actually play this because here's one song I didn't mention that's on the album. From the mirror there, Pat, for crying out loud. Stop spreading the dandruff and put that guitar down. How are you? You all right?
I'm very good, Dave. How are you doing, me?
Sir Pat Carty from Hot Press. The album is called Sticky Fingers. It's the 50th anniversary. It's the Rolling Stones. And we might as well, actually, just when I think about it, what do you call him? David Hepworth has the book out, which he doesn't give the opinion that 1971 is the greatest year for rock ever. He says it's a fact. And he makes a bloody good kind of argument in his book about that. So you can pick lots of albums from the time. We picked this one. It's 50 years this week. Sticky Fingers, the Rolling Stones. What do you think, Pat? Do you like it?
What do I think? Well, let me tell you, first of all, give me some background here. This comes in the center of the greatest purple patch that any artist has ever had. In fact, I would go, the Stones between 68 and 72 is probably, not to exaggerate too much, the pinnacle of all human achievement, probably.
I'm not going to argue that.
You have the Sistine Chapel. That's pretty good. Shakespeare had a few good lines. We went to the moon, maybe, you know. But the Rolling Stones, this is the greatest rock and roll band ever. And this 4 years is the greatest stuff they did. And sitting in the middle of that, as you say, 50 years ago this week, Sticky Fingers. And 50 years ago yesterday, is just the song you just played came out as a 7-inch
really?
Single.
Okay, I'm just thinking, I'm just trying to think. This would be their, I'd say their 8th album, maybe? No? I don't know.
9th. 9th, really? Here. But there's a confusion because you know the way they had different albums in America.
Oh, right, yeah,
here,
of course, so yeah. And one of the reasons for all that is because of that stupid guy who ruined the Beatles too. What a crook, Alan Klein. He kind of had, he took their songs and did stuff with different albums in America, didn't he?
Yeah, but that's the thing with Alan Klein as well, that even on this album, Brown Sugar, which he just played on Wild Horses, he kind of owns, you know, he owns all the stuff before that.
Yeah.
And he has full rights to that. So they were held up for a while being released. You know, it was about a year and a half between this and Let It Bleed, which at the time was a huge amount of time for any band. I mean, it's nothing now for a band.
The way it goes now, it can be 10 years. I mean, 2 years is a long time in those days. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And some of them should wait a bit longer as well, if you ask me. But you know, so he had the rights to that. And anytime there's a greatest hits or anything like that, that's why they only start in 71 when they reissued Let It Bleed and all those. Oh, there's no extra stuff because the Stones wouldn't allow it, you know.
Do you know, there is a story as well that John Lennon came to Mick Jagger and asked him about, you know, this guy Alan Klein may be managing us. And John was having such a bad time with Paul and trying to get George and Ringo on side and all the rest of it and that. And Mick could have told him, and never did, that your man was a crook.
Would you not think it might have been the other way, that John Lennon was going, oh God, this fella's after shafting us, I'll pass him onto the Stones, seeing as they do everything else?
No, it was the other way around, because they had Klein before the Beatles did, so it was kind of odd. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm certainly not saying it is, allegedly. So tell me more then about this album. Just give us a bit of the history. We're talking here about Sticky Fingers from the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about there, first of all, as I say, Brown Sugar came out first and was their first proper single. You know, there's a few live singles because Get Your Yah Yahs Out came out the year before, but it was the first proper single since Honky Tonk Woman, which would have been about a year and a half beforehand. And if you think about Brown Sugar now, just as you played it there, and I suppose we're so used to hearing it, it's such a great song and everything, but the lyrics of that song...
Yeah, I know, they don't really last well in 2021, do they?
Could you imagine a band, who's the biggest band in the world now, I don't know, who did you play earlier on, The Strokes? Sure, they'd be taken out in a shot if they had a single like that, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff he's talking about. Jagger says he wrote it in a hurry, and he says if he did it now or if he did it later on, he wouldn't have done it. But it doesn't matter anyway, because... or it does matter, sorry, I'm not trying to offend anyone. But the sound of that record is the sound of the Rolling Stones. And what you have there is you have Keith Richards combining with Charlie Watts, and that's the sound of the Rolling Stones. And that's what other bands can't get right. Everybody's tried to copy the Rolling Stones. They can't do it because they don't have those two fellas. And the sound of that record, and also you have Bobby Keys on the sax, you have Nicky Hopkins on piano, Neen Stewart on piano. Bill Wyman is great on that. And that's just the first single. So you can imagine that comes out in, you can probably remember this, I don't know, but when it comes out in that, and on the B side of that, you have Bitch, which is on side two of this album, which is another great rock and roll song.
Fantastic.
And that's not even it. The Let It Rock, the cover from the Live at Leeds bootleg that was included on the deluxe of this a couple of years ago, is, you know, that's the single, first of all. And then the following week, this record comes out. It's a huge hit. It's I think this was the first one that was number one on both sides of the Atlantic. And it is a lot of people. I prefer Exile on Main Street. I'd say that first of all. It's just it's a different kind of thing. But a lot of people think this is their greatest album, and it's maybe their most focused album. How about that? It's the first one with Mick Taylor is on it. He was on a few songs on Let It Bleed. People that don't know, Mick Taylor was brought in to replace Brian Jones when he was fired. Not when he died. He was fired before he was died. Yeah. Before he died. And Taylor's on this one. He's fully on this one. So Keith Richards had said in his book, "Oh, we were writing songs differently because we had Mick Taylor." You know, so you could adjust for that, and you could give him a bit of room to work.
Yeah,
it's the one with all the extra musicians on it. Nicky Hopkins is there on piano. You have
Mick
Jim
Taylor
Price.
Does a thing on "Can't You Hear Me Knocking" on this, which is kind of like a very kind of Santana kind of guitar, which he really brought forward in "Time Waits for No One" from the Rock. It's only Rock and Roll album.
Yeah, well, that's the question about that. I mean, he doesn't get any co-writing credits on this. Yeah. He doesn't get a co-writing credit on "Time Waits for No One," which he definitely wrote. There's "Moonlight Mile."
Absolutely.
Keith Richards isn't even on Moonlight Mile. Keith Richards
is he not? Really?
Back in, he only sings back and vocals on Sway. He doesn't play guitar out. So, you know, Mick Taylor eventually one of the reasons he leaves the Rolling Stones is because of that. Ronnie Wood comes in. Ronnie Wood is a bit more pliable, I suppose, maybe a bit more amiable. You know, they were never as good again. They were great, but they were never as good again.
Okay, listen, 51552 is our text. We're talking to Pat Carty here from Hot Press about Sticky Fingers. So one of the songs you mentioned there, I mean, I don't know, do I have a favourite on the album? It's just such a great album. Possibly Sway? That's just fantastic. What was I going to say? Funny thing is, like, it's just you forget sometimes how sloppy it is, and that's total 100% praise. Could I put it this way and say, here's one for you, because like obviously Exile on Main Street you think is the best, and no, but Exile on Main Street is incredible, double album of even sloppier stuff in some ways, and that's what makes it so great. Do you think Sticky Fingers is Mick and Exile on Main Street is Keith's?
Absolutely, 100%. I'll tell you why. Just even listening to Sway there. His singing has never been better in any record than
He turned it into performance art at that stage, because people were kind of taking him off and doing covery bits and getting kind of mad Americanized. Exactly. It was brilliant.
But he was like, of all the singers of that came from that British invasion, so to speak, and everything, he was the one who incorporated that sound of America and made it his own. You know, when people, as you say, take the mick out of it. But you know, he just made it his own, and he built his whole career from there on is built on this record, but also his lyrics. Like that Sway, there's a line in Sway there, "Someone who broke me up at the corner of a smile." That's fantastic. He doesn't get credit for being such a great songwriter. Brown Sugar, just to go back to Brown Sugar, everybody thinks, oh yeah, it starts off Keith Richards, great, you know. Mick wrote that. He wrote that song completely, and Keith says it in his book. Oh, Mick wrote that, you know. There's the old, you know, and you know this one, and everyone knows this one. There's this tired old idea that, Keith Richards is the soul of the Stones, and he's the keeper of the flame and all this, and all Mick is interested in is pound notes, which is probably true to an extent. But, you know, without Mick, Keith would have been, he would have been down in the corner, you know.
Whoa, controversial. 51552. No, I get your point. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's take a look at some of the other stuff here. We're talking about, what am I talking about? We haven't mentioned the album cover yet and how important album covers were. You don't get more important than this album cover. Why, Pat?
Why? Well, first of all, Mick is ascending into the jet set as Keith is going further and further down, I suppose. And he's friends with Andy Warhol. And apparently they were in a club or something talking about it. And Andy, Mr. Warhol, suggested, oh, it'd be great to do this thing with the zip on the cover. So if people don't know it, it's a close-up photograph of a gentleman's crotch with a working zip on it. Now, I've done some research to try and find out who it is. People were saying it was Mick. It's not Mick. Apparently, and this comes from Craig Braun, who was the designer of the cover, it's a fella called Corey Grant Tippin on the front and the back, because his ass is on the back. And then you pull down the zip and you can see some Y fronts inside, and this is on the original one. And that's Glenn O'Brien, who was one of the editors of Interview magazine, which is Warhol's magazine. Now, Braun was he worked on the Velvet Underground, the Banana album, you know, the cover of that.
Yeah.
And he would go on, here's some trivia that you're going to like. He would go on, he'd get a Grammy for the orchestral version of Tommy in 1974, and then he'd take to the cocaine in a big way. And he had a few lost years, became an actor later on, and his son is Nicholas Braun, who plays Greg Hirsch in Succession, which I know you're fond of.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. The connection. It's always there with Succession.
Yeah, I've done me work this morning, Dave. And anyway, the zip. So the the zip was on the initial record, so you buy the record and you could pull down the zip. Now, when they reissued it a couple of years ago, which I have over there, they did the same thing again. But very quickly after they put it out initially, it was as you said, I think you mentioned at the top of the program, it was damaging the other records. So it was damaging not only the record.
Yeah, people always said it damaged the actual album of the Stones, but actually it was damaging the other records that you had lined up beside it.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, the other thing to remember about this is maybe it was on the single, but it was definitely on this, that's the first time that the logo, the tongue and lips logo turns up. That everyone.
Well, we had a thing on the program about that last week with Brian Boyd, and it's probably the most famous in the whole world, the most successful in the whole of music, isn't it?
Which I was totally listening to, of course. supposed to be Mick. Well, then if you said all this, sure, I'll go quickly through. It was supposed to be Mick, but it's actually Kali, the Hindu goddess, and the fellow who designed it initially got, you know, very little money. He sold the copyright eventually in the 80s for very little. But your man, Brown, who's involved, who did the donkey work for Andy Warhol, he touched it up because he got faxed a black and white copy of it or something. So all the white stripes and all that. So it's a few people on it. But I mean, yeah, that's the one that ends up on everybody's school bag and everybody's
desk. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Okay, the Stones themselves, I mean, like, they were always there, weren't they? Like, when the culture was shifting in any way at all, I know the Beatles were great, but like, the Stones were always out front. They always came that way. And with this album here, what did they do? Did they just say, right, okay, we're not going away. We're not just the 60s. Look what we can do. Is that it?
Well, there was some stuff in the press at the time, as if, you know, there hadn't been a record for a year and a half, and then people said, what are the Stones going to do? You know, and imagine that, you know, they don't talk about bands like that now. What are the Stones, as if they're some sort of movement, you know?
Yeah,
what are they going to do?
Exactly.
How are they going to change things? Now, I was thinking about that Brown Sugar again, and if you think about, right, that came out in 1971, and that gets to the top of the charts in America, right? A song with those lyrics. Now, this is some sort of pinnacle of rock and roll as a properly subversive thing. So if you think of 5 years later, 6 years later, the Pistols are banned, right? That, you know, it's not like, but the Stones get to play this on Top of the Pops. And then if you think 5 years before, no band would even think about writing a song like that. And then later on we have, you know, Live Aid and everything, and rock becomes this corporate thing, and, you know, it's certainly not, you know, there's only Plastic Rebels in it now at best. But I mean, at that time, there's genuinely something subversive about writing a song like that, you know, offensive as it might be, and getting it to the top of the charts. This was the biggest band in the world.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you a little blast of this one here for a different type of sound from the album, which people will know very well. In fact, maybe Susan Boyle fans will know this. Did you ever hear her version of this?
Oh, Dave, bad Dave.
Come on, Mick. Drag me away. Wild Horses is the name of the song. It's Nicky Hopkins, isn't it? Is he the one who's on piano there, or Ian Stewart?
I think they're both. There might be both on that. I mean, the thing about that one is they recorded that and Brown Sugar, and You Got to Move, the only cover on the record. They recorded that in Muscle Shoals in Alabama while they were on the 69 tour. But the story goes that they didn't have the proper permits, so they had to do it kind of undercover and sneak in and do it. But you can see that in the Gimme Shelter movie. They have clips of that in it. But that song, there's a lot of things going on there. It's a country ballad, but Mick sings a kind of blues. But before that came out at all, about a year before, it comes out on the Flying Burrito Brothers' second album, Graham Parsons. And Graham, you know, a lot of people said, oh, well, Graham had a lot to do with that. But there's a book by Stanley Booth, who was there at the time, and he says, look, I'm a friend of Graham's. He had nothing to do with putting that song together. But he just said to Mick, listen, if we don't release it as a single, can we have it? And on his version, on their version, Leon Russell plays the piano, and the piano is much more heavy. And it's a completely different kind of thing altogether, but it's much more a straight country record. But that's fantastic. And then on side two, you see, you have Mick doing his kind of cod country voice for Dead Flowers.
Yeah, I'll give you a little blast of that. And by the way, the Wild Horses, the way it goes for the last few minutes is just fantastic. Oh, yeah. Carry on with the whole band. Now this is Mick going, I'm going to go all the way and take off a kind of a country American thing, because I'm Mick Jagger again. You're sitting there in your silk upholstered chair, and I won't forget to put roses on your grave. On your grave. 51552 is the text. We're talking to Pat Carty here about Sticky Fingers, 50 years old this week. Jimmy Miller was the producer of the album.
Yeah, Jimmy Miller in. I think they heard him first. I think he did some of the early Traffic albums.
He did everything Steve Winwood. He did
Did he? Yeah.
He did Blind Faith, he did Traffic, and he did Spencer Davis Group, yeah.
Oh, did he? All right, okay. Yeah. And then I think that's where Mick came across him. So he comes in. He's an essential figure in this story, because that Golden Pinnacle, the greatest thing that ever happened in human history. That starts with Jumpin' Jack Flash, which is what, May 68. And that's the first bit of work he does with them.
Right.
And so he produces that. He produces Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, this, the Honky Tonk Woman single, Exile, and then Goat's Head Soup, which I think should be included in that. Oh, some people leave that out.
No, I definitely include it. It's a great album, Goat's Head Soup.
Yeah, great album, yeah. Mm. And yeah, Jimmy Miller was he was a drummer as well. So he actually plays the drums, or I think he plays the drums on You Can't Always Get What You Want, or one of those. And it's him doing the cowbell on Honky Tonk Woman.
Oh my God, the cowbell.
Yeah, the cowbell. That.
Absolutely. Good start.
And I was talking about this morning, and I got a message from Dave Clark from the Hot House Flowers, and he says, oh, we made a record with Jimmy Miller, and that was the Blue Angels, Blue in Heaven.
Oh, nice.
He also worked with Primal Scream. If ever there was a band who wanted to be the Rolling Stones, there you go, Primal Scream. But Jimmy Miller's essential part of the story. And after he stops, apparently he was carving swastikas into the sound desk with his drug problems, so he had to go. After he stops, that's when it starts to go slightly downhill.
Yeah, I think he had a famous family, though, afterwards. There's a bunch of people around now who could claim to...
The Millers, was it?
I don't know exactly where or what they do, but yeah, the Millers.
Bernie Miller.
Obviously, yeah. Here, I'll give you something else. Hold on, Dead Flowers is still playing there, actually, sorry. I'll give you... I Got the Blues is fine, but I kind of wish they hadn't got a cover on the album, because I just think they should
have
left...
That's not a cover.
Oh, no, which one is the cover?
The cover is You Got to Move.
Oh, sorry, you Got to Move. No, I Got the Blues is great, but I tell you, I want to hear...
That's Otis Redding, yeah.
I want to give you another blast. Now, this is a kind of a workout, because they just keep going with this. This is called Can't You Hear Me Knocking? Pat, Can't You Hear Me Knocking is what it's called. You're saying that like it was Muscle Shoals, the studio in Alabama and all the rest of it and that.
Yeah.
But they also, when they came back home, did they record in England?
Yeah, they did in Stargroves, which is the very grand name for Mixed Country Pile down outside London. This was the first time they used the famous Rolling Stones mobile studio.
But that must be just before Horselips, because didn't they do their first album with that?
Did Zeppelin do something with it as well? What was Steve Marriott's band? The Small Faces.
What do you mean, what was Smith?
No, the one after
Humble
the Small
Pie.
Faces. They did the live album. I think they used that. Ah, loads of people used it. And the Faces definitely used it as well. Right. But down in Stargrove. So, that song there, that you played there, which I think is maybe the best thing on the album. Just the first half of that, and it changes in the second half, and Bobby Keys comes in, and then Mick Taylor steals the whole
show. The sax and all that, and then his guitar, exactly. And his guitar, as they say, very Santana.
But it's the groove at the start. Like, you can even hear Mick shouting yeah in the background. It's just Keith and Charlie working together. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, Keith Richards isn't as great a guitar player as such and such and blah, blah, blah. But nobody can play it like him. And the groove that they get going there is just, I mean, you'll hear that in 1,000 movies. Nobody has ever come close to that.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say.
Okay,
you know?
God, I'd love to be able to disagree with you, but I can't. You're 100% correct. I'll tell you what, one track I haven't played here, and this one has a kick
to
it.
That's not unusual, Dave.
This one's got a real kick to it, too. Great song from the album, Sticky Fingers, Rolling Stones, Bitch. Pat, I suppose we're going to have to leave it now in a second or two, but I'll tell you, I can play every single track on this album, about it.
That's maybe the best thing on it. And the way this solo turns the beat around, and there's a great story before I go, that they were recording that, and Glenn Johns, you know, the famous producer, they were in Stargroves and they were messing around with that, and Keith showed up a bit late, so the lads were playing that, and it wasn't really going anywhere, and Keith comes in and puts on a guitar, and he says, yeah, hold on a second, he says, just speed it up a bit here, do this, and it turned into that, and Johns was just sitting there going, ah, right, I see what Keith Richards does now. That's what's great about him.
He's the real producer. Okay, so one thing is that Mick has a new single out this week with Dave Grohl.
Oh, Janie Mack.
It's a bit of, hold on a second. The Stones' lockdown single last year was pretty
good.
But tell me what you think of this one out this week.
Well, you see, the difference between the Stones' single last year and the Mick Jagger one is the Stones aren't on it, for a start. Do you know what? Stuart Clark asked me this question during the week, and I was trying to say nice things about it. There's a bridge is all right in it, the chorus of it. It's a good demo, but it's not finished. there. How's that?
Well, is that the best you can do for it? Yeah, okay.
Well, I know it's crap.
Right, okay, fair enough. All right, listen, thank you very much indeed, Patrick. I mean, as I say, 1971, people say, is the year for, like, whatever you want to say.
That's the year I was born as well.
Well, so, hold on. So 100 albums of that year that you could look at and say are the greatest. But if anybody wants to say that Sticky Fingers is, then I'll go along with that. I'm not going against it at all. I'll just give you a blast of one other little bit here that I didn't do, because we've got to, oh yeah, by the way, do you know what we're going to be talking about next? Do you have a rock and roll colouring book? Do you?
Of course I do, yeah.
Right, good man yourself. All right, thanks, Pat Carty. Good luck.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.